Thanks so much for joining us and spending some of your time with us on WPR News Today. Larry Mueller here. Going to take a closer look now at Wisconsin's new alternative fuel corridor and look at EV cars as well with our guest, Caleb Vanderweel. Caleb is the Transportation Electrification Project Manager for the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. And as we talk with Caleb, I hope you'll join in. What would you like to know about the new EV charging stations or information about EV autos? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Caleb Vanderweel, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Larry, thank you for having me on today.
Let's just start by talking about the corridor itself. We've been hearing about this alternative fuel corridor for quite a while. Maybe the background on the project and where are we with it?
So the alternative fuel corridor system, it's a system of highways across the country, but specifically here in Wisconsin, that were created under a previous federal law around 2016, where the state of Wisconsin worked with the Federal Highway Aid Administration to designate certain interstates, state highways, and U.S. highways to support alternative fuels, including electric vehicle charging. Fast forward a couple years to the bipartisan infrastructure law. The bipartisan infrastructure law provides Wisconsin approximately $78 million to fund construction of electric vehicle charging stations on this alternative fuel corridor system. For us in Wisconsin, that alternative fuel corridor system includes all of the state's interstates. What's a little bit unique about Wisconsin's approach compared to other states is we also designated a system of both state highways and U.S. highways as well to increase where we're able to fund these charging stations in the state of Wisconsin. So this includes State Highway 29 from Green Bay to Eau Claire, U.S. 41, U.S. 141, and then across the northern part of the state, U.S. 8, U.S. 2. We also have State Highway 53 up to Superior and U.S. 51 as well. So altogether, we have about 2,000 miles of highways where we're able to fund electric vehicle charging stations, which have to be within one travel mile of that highway system.
And, you know, these chargers are pretty important to the state. I was just listening to our newscast and the fact that, for example, that tourism has reached new highs in terms of dollars from tourists. I got to believe that would be one of the benefits of, you know, getting these charging stations everywhere. If you've got, say you're from Illinois and you've got an electric car, you want to know that I can get to Door County or I can get to Superior without much trouble.
That's absolutely the focus. And when we think about what types of chargers that we are intending to fund under this federal program, we're funding level 3 DC fast chargers, which are the charging activity that's going to be about 20 to 40 minutes that really acts to support both inner city and interstate travel. You know, if you're from, again, Milwaukee, and you want to go to somewhere like Superior or Eagle River, this is the type of charging station that you're going to utilize to be able to complete that type of travel. But when we think about tourism, the main challenge with electric vehicles in the state today really is a lack of availability for publicly available charging stations. When we think about, we look at the system, we have a decent amount of chargers that are publicly available, again, outside of the home. In the Milwaukee area, the Milwaukee suburbs, Dane County, some up through the valley to Green Bay. But really, as you leave urban and suburban areas in the state of Wisconsin, many rural counties have yet to see even an individual publicly available charger. This program will work to start to put chargers in a lot of counties where there currently are no publicly available chargers.
Yeah. Larry in Delavan has a comment for us. Let's go there. Hi, Larry. Thank you for calling.
That's fine. I enjoy my electric Rivian, but I only use it for less than 300-mile trips. I haven't been successful charging on the road anywhere, but it charges overnight at home. Great. And I don't think that our grid system can handle everyone having electric vehicles. They've got to upgrade it before it be good for everyone. And years ago, they had electric taxi cabs in Spain. It's on YouTube. You can watch it. They pull in and they lift the whole front end of the taxi cab off, and they have a crane comes in and picks up a huge lead acid battery out of it and puts in a charged one. And that works great. But I think all the electric vehicles, they should go to a standardized battery where you can pull into a battery station, and in 5 to 10 minutes, they swap out your battery. And that way you don't own the battery. And that makes the vehicles cheaper, because about a third the cost of an electric vehicle is the battery.
Larry, you raise a lot of points here, worthy for sure of discussion. Caleb, what do you think? Larry brought up updating our electric system. The system itself. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely, and one of the things that's beneficial about where we are in the transition to electric vehicles today. Currently, we're only around about 23,000 registered electric vehicles in the state of Wisconsin. That's still far less than a percent of the overall passenger vehicles in the state. So we're really just starting this process. So the time exists for when that grid does need to be upgraded and where it needs to be upgraded for that to happen over time. Again, we're seeing a little bit of a change in the transition. It has started to pick up in the last couple of years. Just a few years ago, we only had about 9,000 electric vehicles. So they're starting to come to the system. But moving there to I think one of your later comments, there are a lot of interesting technologies that are coming forward. You talked about battery replacement as a potential option. We know that there's some in industry looking at that issue. For us and the types of chargers that we're funding under the program, we're seeing a lot of changes in the industry as well. When we started preparing for our program a couple years ago, we were looking at funding the CCS charging port. We still intend to fund that port on our locations, but as we've worked through program development, the Tesla-style NACS connectors has been where industry is moving towards, and as a result, we're moving our program towards that direction. But I think it's an important point that this technology is going to change as we work to develop this program, and it will be interesting to see where industry ends up, especially when it comes to technology such as battery replacement.
Yeah, the whole business about driving in and getting your battery replaced is what Larry was saying happens in Spain. Maybe that's another. I mean, I have an Eagle lawnmower, a trimmer, and a blower, and they all operate on the same battery, and I can pull a battery out in a minute and put the new one, move it from the lawnmower to the blower, for example, with minimal problem. You think there's any chance that might ever happen here with cars?
So not that we've seen so far, but we have seen some conversations about the technology. Specifically, you mentioned a taxi cab company. When it comes to fleet type vehicles, where you own a lot of vehicles, and you have to have a quick transition to keep that vehicle on the road. That's one instance where, we've seen some feasibility of it being a potential. For passenger vehicles, we've seen some conversation of the concept, but haven't seen any real ideas yet to date.
Yeah. And and the manufacturers are going to have to get together on this almost, you got to believe, wouldn't you? I mean, on a system that you can use, that every car has, that can be used anywhere?
Absolutely. And I was talking about the different types of connectors already. You know, there's already efforts to try to work to some standardization of some of the items and some of the components. You know, you've never pulled up to a gas pump with a gas car and have that gas pump not fit into your vehicle. You know, when we think about traditional vehicles, certain things have been standard, you know, across all vehicle types for a long time. Think about, you know, the 3-position seatbelt as an example. When we think about electric vehicles, we're going to have to see some of this happen across that industry as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. Caleb Vanderweel, our guest today, the Transportation Electrification Project Manager for the Wisconsin DOT. It's great to have him with us. And questions for him, I hope you'll join in with your comments. Number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at the transportation electrification project that's going on in Wisconsin with Caleb Vanderweel, who is manager of the Wisconsin Department of Transportation project on this. Great to have him with us. Join in. You can email us to talk@WPR.org or phone in at 1-800-642-1234. Jordan in Langlade County has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Jordan.
Hi there, folks. Thanks for taking my call. My question has to do with power generation. You know, right now we have 23,000 odd electric vehicles in the state. But, you know, if this catches on and we, you know, in a couple of years have 230,000 or 2.3 million of these vehicles on the road, where are we going to get that electricity that isn't, you know, hauling more coal out of the earth or digging for more oil? What are we going to do as far as developing that power so that we can actually make steps towards this being an effective program?
All right. Jordan, thanks for calling. Caleb?
Jordan, thank you for the question. So we have a couple things to consider, and it's that initial generation of that power. You know, one of the things that, you know, I think we've seen as a benefit, you know, a substantial amount of our grid is powered by fossil fuels. But over time, we've seen some of that dial begin to turn towards other types of renewables, towards natural gas. You know, that's going to have to be, you know, part of that conversation as we transition you not only to electric vehicles, but to other parts of electrification. You know, when we think about people who have an electric stove or maybe an electric heat pump, you know, there's a lot of items that we as consumers purchase that have moved towards that electrification. You know, Larry mentioned, you know, some of his garden tools as another example. So when we think about that generation, you know, we have to ensure that over time that dial is being tuned up. And to, again, to a lot of people's efforts to, you know, ensure potentially that, you know, some of that fuel source is cleaner. Because, again, when you look at some of the grid today, it is very heavily fossil fuel oriented. But when we think about, you know, electric vehicle charging, you know, our department perspective is less on the focus of the generation of that power, but the distribution of it. Attempting to fund electric vehicle charging, especially in more rural parts of the state of Wisconsin, not only do we need that generation capacity, but we need distribution in place to be able to get that electricity to those charging stations. The department's funding level 3 DC fast charging stations, and the goal is to fund 4 charging ports at 150 kilowatts per hour at each location. So at 600 kilowatts per location is a fairly substantial distribution of electricity. And this comes back to the planning effort that the department had to undertake to be able to deploy these charging stations. We looked at our alternative fuel corridor system, looked at 2,000 miles of that system of interstates, U.S. highways, and a state highway. And we had to complete analysis that showed where we have not only generation, but distribution in place to be able to place charging stations. So when you look at our tentative locations for our program, we have 53 project locations across the state of Wisconsin. Very excited to have those projects be distributed very diversely across the state of Wisconsin in each corner of the state. But when you look at the areas where we're funding charging stations, we're funding them where there's already substantial commercial activity, near big box retail, near truck stops, near gas stations, near restaurants, and oftentimes a basket of amenities at a location, a few restaurants, a few gas stations, a big box retail store or two. The more commercial activity we have in a location, the more likely we are to have that distribution of that electricity at that location to be able to support that charging station.
Yeah, actually, Joe or Jim had emailed and wondering about restaurants. Would there be, you know, they would be a prime location for recharging stations. Wondering about, is the cost of installing these so high that this won't happen? But it sounds like some of this is going to happen.
So cost is the main concern. And when the department, we started looking at electric vehicles a little bit later than other states around, you know, winter of 2021, when the conversation of the bipartisan infrastructure law began. And at that time, we had to determine, you know, what would be the department's role in the conversation on electric vehicles. And we quickly determined in some conversations with industry that the cost barriers to providing electric vehicle charging as being one of the main considerations for industry and their ability to deliver charging stations. This is where I think that federal investment comes into play and into that conversation. The federal investment in many of the areas where we are funding these charging stations is really the only opportunity for these locations to get to a return on investment on that charging station. The state of Wisconsin's not going to be owning and operating charging stations under this program. Rather, we're giving the dollars out as a grant to private site host owners and operators. So under our first 53 projects, we have some locations that many Wisconsinites will know, but they're mostly mostly gas convenience. We'll have a charging station at a gas station right next to the Torpedo restaurant in Thorpe, Wisconsin. The Pine Cone in Johnson Creek will have charging stations. So we got to some really exciting locations, but mostly gas and fuel retail. We do have, again, a couple restaurants. We have about five hotels that we will be placing these charging stations at, and then an attraction as well. But again, not having the state own and operate under this program, we thought was a prudent idea. And again, our goal is to really incentivize private industry to not only own and operate charging stations under this program, but to be able to do so in the future after the federal dollars have been used.
And I heard you say like four charging stations. I was going to ask about that, and someone else had wondered in an email, you know, what if you get to the gas station, there's only one there, and there's like three cars in line waiting to get power?
So that's a really important consideration. Leaning into the program a couple years ago, the federal government, I think, was correct in understanding that a lot of publicly available charging so far has been fairly unreliable. It's that either that one charging port or two, oftentimes not in a great location. You know, if you only have one charging station on your route to a destination and you get to that charging station, it's not operational, that can really ruin your day. So there is a federal standard in place governing the use of these dollars that requires us at each location for there to be the ability for four vehicles to all charge at 150 kilowatt hour apiece at the same time.
Dan in central Wisconsin has something I think relates a bit. Let's go there. Dan, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call.
All right, well, I've been an EV owner for 7 years now. And one of the things that I'd like to say is that we also have solar panels on our house. And some of your callers are making an excellent argument for going with renewable energy. Drive on sunshine most of the time. The other thing I want to say is that, like a lot of EV drivers, we don't use the interstate system because going 70 miles an hour uses your battery up fairly fast by comparison with going 55, 57, 58. So we tend to use two-lane roads, and that's where I'd like to see more charging stations placed. The other thing, the other recommendation I have is we ought to have charging stations at all the state parks, because and they don't have to be level three chargers. They can be level two chargers. If you're going to be spending a few hours somewhere, the expense of a level two charging station versus a level three is very, very different. Level two chargers are very inexpensive to put in. So that's my comment.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Caleb, what do you think?
Excellent points. So the caller talked a lot about the state highway system and that two-digit system. I'm a motorist who likes to use the two-digit and three-digit system as well as I travel the state. That was part of our consideration when we thought about where to place charging stations under our program. We did an analysis, and we have a publicly stated goal that we believe that 85% of that state highway system, you will be within 25 miles of a charging station on this under this program. So even if you're choosing to utilize that two-digit highway system, you'll still be able to come across a charging station under our program, and that's one of our stated goals. Talking a little bit about destination charging as well is really, really important. Under our program, the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program, our focus is primarily that on-route travel on your way to a destination. And usually when you're trying to get to a destination, you're trying to get to that destination. So you don't want to spend an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours charging your vehicle. You want to spend, 20 to 40 minutes, and you want to be on your way. But when you're at a destination, especially a destination, we're going to have some dwell time, a few hours, that does open up the door to opportunities for slower types of charging that can be much more both cost efficient from a construction perspective, but also cost efficient from the perspective of supporting that charging, given that there might be reduced grid capacity because you might be in a far rural area. So that's also part of, I think, the future conversation.
We should actually mention, we've talked about levels here, and one and three and two have all come up. Maybe Caleb, go back and explain those levels.
So we functionally have three levels of charging that we bring into conversations. Level one and level two charging, just keeping it as simple as possible, is potentially that charging activity in your home garage overnight. Not only is it a very cost-efficient installation from the few hundred to the few thousand dollars, but also that electricity that you're drawing through that level one or level two charger is going to be very cost-efficient for you as that EV driver. Back of the napkin math we like to talk about, if you're charging your vehicle at home at night in your home garage, we're thinking you're going to be at about 20% on the comparison to a gallon of gasoline. Level three fast charging is a little bit of a different ballgame. You go from kind of the few hundred, few thousand to projects that are in the hundreds of thousands of dollars to deploy. In some states, their NEVI projects are over the $1 million mark in some location. But that all builds to that convenience of that speed of that electricity into that electric vehicle. Level three charger, again, working towards maybe a half hour charging activity, but with that capital cost of that construction, that there's also that substantial draw on electricity. So electricity through a level three fast charging station sometimes can be, that equivalent cost of that gallon of gasoline. So as a result, EV motorists tend to utilize level three fast chargers, again, for when they have that need of convenience for longer distance travel.
Yeah. And the level one, you get about, 1 to 2.5 miles per hour of charge, and the level two, 10 to 60 miles per hour of charge. Is that, that's about right, I believe.
It's roughly correct. Level one can be about 5 miles per hour. You can plug a level one charger into a standard 120 volt outlet. A level two charger, you're going to need a 240 volt outlet, but you're going to be able to get to, 20 to 60 miles an hour for that charge. Level three, generally, we look to about 60 to 100 miles for every 20 minutes of that charging activity.
Yeah. And so if like for homeowners, might be for a lot of people, it'd be worth it just to, level one's going to be fine for me, but others may need to call the electrician and have a little bit of money there to set up so they would be able to use the level two.
Absolutely. We hear anecdotes of EV users that they get home and they have that option to go install that level two charger. They plug in the level one and that's all they ever use and they never upgrade. We hear that sometimes. But, you know, an important point to make, and this is some of the culture change that I think the department at this point is supporting, is most EV users. And in our first caller, he mentioned this, the fact that he only charges at home and he rarely, if ever, charges on the public system. You know, that's great for those users. You know, when you can get to 75, 80, 90% of your charging at home in your garage, that makes owning an EV a little bit more cost efficient. But that's also part of the case in many instances across Wisconsin, because many individuals who have chosen to purchase an electric vehicle may potentially live in a county that has no publicly available charging. And I've heard and had a couple conversations the last few months or so with individuals who wanted to still live in rural Wisconsin and own an electric vehicle, and they've chosen to do so, and they have yet to charge outside of their home because they have nowhere to charge.
Tony in the town of Madison emailed that tonight at the Fitchburg Library, there will be an EV 101 event. It goes from 6 to 7:30 with a short presentation by an MGE representative, MG&E. And then they'll go outside to allow individuals attending to see and ask questions of the owners who will have their vehicles there. So nice little event in the town of Madison tonight, the Fitchburg Library. David in Sherwood, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I live in a multi-tenement building, you know, so charging is a problem for me. I have to go to a public charger right now. But I've been doing a lot of research, and there are energy management systems that allow the EV charger to ramp up or slow down the charging rate on an individual vehicle based on usage rates. So if I were using my own meter, I could still charge even though I only have a 125 amp service, because all I have to do is set it up to charge at a certain time when I know I won't be using as much capacity, and it will not charge until there's enough capacity there, and then it will charge while there's capacity. So I think, you know, a lot of us think in terms of a glass half empty, but actually that glass is also half full.
Yeah. Comment on that, Caleb?
Yeah, that's absolutely the way we look at it. And it goes back to some of the conversations about, you know, the energy systems that make up our grid, or, you know, we talk about what's currently available and potential for charging. You know, we're seeing systems like the caller just discussed that are you know, provide some potential for some real cost efficiency for that user. And we're really excited to see some of these things come forward. And again, it kind of leans into, you know, we hope that what WISDOT is working towards in supporting these fast chargers and with industry across the state of Wisconsin, that you know, conversation that someone might have as a family thinking about purchasing an electric vehicle, that they're able to start seeing some of the things that are out there that, you know, if they want to make that decision, that they're able to do so with some confidence.
Yeah. Thanks, David. Appreciate the call. Kendall in Merrill, will you go to you next? Hi, Kendall.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, initially, I wanted to talk about where the minerals and metals for the batteries for electric vehicles are sourced, because if our goal is to help the environment in this global, in our global reality, we need to be aware of, you know, how we're affecting the whole world. And even if we might be saving a little bit of air pollution here, the mines where the metals are extracted, they're left in devastation, as well as the humanitarian considerations, because the people doing the mining are not protected from the toxic effects, et cetera. So that's one thing to address. And then the other thing, as I've been listening to the conversation, is the fact that so many people live in apartments or trailer, you know, mobile homes. They have no garage. They have probably no way to charge at home. So I've heard rumor of, oh, this percentage of our vehicles on the road need to be electric by a certain year. Well, how do those people get to drive? And it seems like the government also is competing with private sector, who's providing gas. You know, we have gas stations all over. I can get gas anywhere I want in my with the current situation. I can fuel my car in a matter of minutes.
Yeah.
And if you try to force people to use electric, it just seems like it's going to be not convenient and not even possible for many people. So those are a lot of issues to consider. Thank you for your time.
All right, Kendall, thanks for calling. Well, she raised a few issues there. Caleb, comments?
Yeah, I'll dive in on the multi-unit dwelling conversation. You know, this is one of the things that is constantly brought up in conversations with stakeholders around the state of Wisconsin. You know, I think something about 30% of Wisconsinites are renters, oftentimes in those multi-unit dwellings where, you know, they're not going to have that easy outlet either on the side of their house to run that extension cable to their vehicle or in their garage. So I think that's a big part of the conversation moving forward is how we begin to answer some of that question. You know, one of the things that we have as a perspective in our program, as it is a federal program, is a drive from the federal administration to support 40% of the dollars utilized under this program in disadvantaged communities. And that is something that we've taken very seriously as a department. Out of the 53 projects that we're funding, 15 of those projects have been proactively cited in disadvantaged communities to begin to support charging in communities that currently do not have access to charging. One other thing that we're very excited about as a department, we're the first and only state under the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program to be funding projects with tribal governments. We have two tribal projects under our program, which we are also very excited about. To the point on, you know, the public sector competing with the private sector, if there's, you know, the thing that keeps you up at night, this is the one for me. You know, we as the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, we've never owned and operated gas pumps as far as I can find. And really, we don't want to be owning and operating charging stations as well. We're not going to be installing charging stations at our rest areas and our waysides. We believe that the fueling industry and private industry that currently exist across the state are best suited to be owning and operating these charging stations. We really view the federal dollars that we have as an incentive for that private industry. As we started to think about this program the last couple of years, we really immediately found ourselves in conversations with a lot of businesses across the state that have said to us, hey, we would like to provide and we would like to sell electricity and we'd like to own and operate charging stations. We just can't get to that return on investment. So we do really view these dollars and funding these charging stations at private locations that they are going to own and operate themselves as a way for the public sector to be involved here for a little bit, but then step away and allow the private sector to continue to own and operate.
And in terms of the ethics, there's a trade-off between, I mean, there's ethics involved with gasoline, I think, as well as the materials that Kendall was talking about, mining materials that need to be used for batteries.
And when it comes to materials, you know, I think this space is ever constant changing, and it's just as comparative to, you know, we talk about the fuel sources that fuel our grid. Over time, it's going to change. You know, we had some news out of Pennsylvania recently about lithium discoveries in Pennsylvania, where there might be lithium resources that may be fairly easily accessible. You know, this is something where, you know, there are significant concerns, especially when we look at some of the countries where some of this material comes from. That's going to have to be part of the conversation moving forward.
Yeah. Kendall, thanks again. Appreciate it. Caleb Vanderweil, our guest today, Transportation Electrification Project Manager for the Wisconsin DOT. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at Wisconsin's alternative fuel corridor with our guest, Caleb Vanderweil. Thank you so much for joining in. Lots of callers online with questions. There's a line open at 800-642-1234, or by all means, email to talk@WPR.org. Wayne in Green Bay, we go to you next. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I picked up my Tesla Model Y in June of 22, and the very next month, I took a trip, business trip, down to Atlanta, Georgia. All I had to do was punch in my motel address, and it gave me the entire route with all the charging stations I needed. I took 2 days going down. I had to charge twice a day. Slept in my car the first night on the way down and on the first night on the way back. Camping in your car is an electric vehicle is a thing because you don't have a gas engine and worry about fumes. It can keep the temperature constant through the night. It was simple as could be. There was plenty of charging stations. I never was in doubt of being able to find one. They've expanded the charging stations in Wisconsin quite a bit over those 2 years. I mean, you've got Marinette, Wausau, Stevens Point just opened up, Sheboygan, Manitowoc, Appleton, Minocqua. There's plenty of charging, or I shouldn't say plenty, but quite a few out there. And they're strategically put so that if you're on the highway that, you know, every, at least I would say 30 to 50 miles, there's another charging station available somewhere. So I wouldn't be afraid of that. Also, a comment on the charging. Somebody was talking about, you know, where is the electricity going to come from? I believe it also, charging your car at night, the rates are much less. And that's when the grid has the most electricity available. So it kind of balances the grid, I think, a little bit. My car has around a 75-kilowatt battery. The average cost in Wisconsin is 16 cents a kilowatt when you're paying from your house. So it only takes $12 to fill my car from 0 to 100. So it's very economical.
And how far does your car go on a fill, let's call it?
Well, like the other caller had said, highway driving reduces. It's kind of just the opposite of gas, where gas gets more efficient because of the gearing, even though wind resistance does affect them too. But wind resistance is the only thing that affects electric vehicles. So I would say it was rated 303 miles when I picked it up. I would say technically between 250 in that area right now. But, you know, for your daily driving to and from work, I live 8 miles from my house and back and forth. Today I came to work and then I went down to Manitowoc, came back. I still have like 45% of my power left, no problem. So you go home, you plug it into your garage, and I'm lucky enough to have a garage. When you wake up in the morning the next day, you got a full car. Every day it's full.
Yeah. Wayne, thank you so much for calling. Comment, Caleb?
Yeah, you know, these anecdotes are really helpful in our conversations that we have about EV. When we talk with so many people who, you know, they may have seen EV covered in a negative light, their main concern with electrification and electric vehicles is range anxiety. You know, am I going to be able to go to where I want to desire to drive to as a motorist? And, you know, we hear examples like we just heard now. It really shows that even longer distance travel in many places in the U.S., charging is available and does work. You know, we're hopeful for, you know, the program that the department's funding that we can get these types and that quality of charging just to more areas that it hasn't been able to get to so far.
Yeah, Wayne, thank you so much for calling. Jerry in Whitehall, your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Yeah, go ahead, Jerry. Jerry was calling. He loves his Kia Hybrid and wonders why not just go with one of those.
You know, we've seen a lot of conversation about, you know, and we've talked a lot about fully electric vehicles, but plug-in hybrids can also be a really awesome part of the equation. And, you know, as we've seen some market forces move back and forth over the last couple of years, we're seeing, you know, some additional interest in our auto manufacturers to look back into those types of plug-in hybrids. And what's great with a plug-in hybrid is, you do have that backup gas engine. So your range is a little bit more expanded in that instance.
Tony in Middleton emailed to ask approximately when will those first round 53 EV fast charging locations be operational? Also, what's the plan regarding the remaining federal funds that are available to Wisconsin under the IRA bill? He believes the funds allocated are over $70 million and in this first round is for $23 million.
Those are all great questions. So we have 53 projects selected. For those paying attention to the economy that's around us, there are still supply chain concerns. So that utility transformer, sourcing that charging station, getting to construction, in some instances is going to take some time. We have a handful of projects that will be operational this year. We are looking at an October operational date for a couple of them. Many of the projects that we're funding will be operational in 2025. And then out of those 53, there'll be a couple that will come online in early of 2026, but it'll take time for all of them to be online. One of the things where we are very happy about is the cost efficiency of our program. We were given through the federal formula approximately $78 million. So far under these 53 projects, we are only spending $23 million of that funding. Under the federal rules for the program, after we build out this alternative fuel corridor system, we're then allowed to take that remaining money, move off the alternative fuel system, and fund projects in communities across Wisconsin, both level 3 charging stations, as well as the federal rule does allow us to fund level 2 charging stations off of that system as well. So as we work towards finalizing the build out of our system, we'll start the conversation about how the state can best meet needs off of the alternative fuel corridor system.
Mickey emailed to ask if you're aware of all the standalone off-the-grid solar charging stations that Polaris is putting up across the UP over Michigan, Mickey thinks is pretty exciting.
No, I am not, but it's interesting to see, you know, how the demand for charging is being met. An interesting anecdote from a while ago, a local utility decided to see what would happen if they put a charging station basically in the middle of nowhere. And the day after it was operational, somebody had found it and was already charging. So if you build it, they will come, is some of the mentality we think about when we think about some of these rural areas. But, you know, that dovetails back into tourism and really, EV motorists, they want to get out, they want to adventure, and they want to be able to get to places. And we're hoping with some of these additional locations and some of them that will be on fairly soon, they'll be able to get to where they want to go.
Thinking about I do not own an electric car right now, but I'm thinking about the glory of never having oil changes or no spark plugs to worry about or no timing belt to worry about. And that all goes away with an all electric car, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Let's go to Mark and Nina. Hi, Mark.
Hi there. Your guest suggested that like a level 1 and level 2 charging station was like 20% of the cost of gas per mile or whatever. And then he said that the level 3s are a lot more expensive. And I'm an electrical engineer, and I mean, electricity costs what electricity costs no matter how fast you're using it. So does that costs include the amortization of the installation? Is that why it costs
yes.
so much, or is there
yes.
something else?
That capital construction. So you go from a charging station, you know, that may have been a few hundred to a few thousand dollar installation to a capital construction project of $500,000 to $1 million. Meeting that return on investment means that that owner operator of that charging station has to price that electricity in accordance with what that activity getting to that point had cost that business.
There you go, Mark. Thanks for that call. Bill in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I have a question. How come the cars are not producing their own electricity to charge the batteries? You have an alternator on your car now that charges your battery. So why don't they have an alternator on both back wheels?
So there is braking technology that does recycle some of that electricity in some electric vehicles, and I know in some hybrid vehicles. So some of that is coming into play and is part of the conversation.
Yeah, so it's there, or it's getting there, Bill. Thank you. David in New Richmond, your turn. Hi, David.
Hey, imagine if everyone could afford an electric vehicle, if they got to be cheap enough where everyone could have one in Wisconsin to use in the summertime, and where would we ever get vehicles that would be produced cheap enough for everyone to afford them?
So, you know, this is a thing that is kind of core to the transition to electric vehicles. The cost of lithium batteries has substantially been reduced over the last 15 years. When you go back and you look at the start of the electrification conversation, you know, late 2000s, heading towards about 2010, you know, there were substantial cost barriers to those batteries. Those have steadily come down. We've seen cost of electric vehicles steadily come down. Right now, there are federal tax incentives. If you purchase a new electric vehicle that qualifies under the program, $7,500, it's at point of sale. You don't have to wait until you do your taxes to get that benefit. And then there's also a $4,000 benefit if you purchase a used electric vehicle. But with that in hand, with, again, some prices starting to come down, we're seeing some of those base model electric vehicles now be cheaper than an equivalent gas car. And that was something that wasn't seen 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, David, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate the call. Someone brought up that some states are working toward a ban of gas-powered cars. Any chance Wisconsin is headed that way, the writer wonders.
No, you know, there's some states that have put, you know, fairly aggressive goals on, you know, where they would like to be with electrification. We took a little bit of a different approach. You know, we believe by supporting publicly available charging that's privately owned and operated, we believe that, you know, we are hoping to help people make a decision of whether or not they want to purchase an electric vehicle, but we have not set any type of goal, deadline, or requirement.
Yeah, that makes sense, I think, for Wisconsin. And safety? That was another question. What about the safety of this whole process?
So when it comes to I'll talk specifically about charging stations. When we get asked about safety, it's this idea of, hey, you might be sitting at your vehicle at night, late for an hour, waiting for it to recharge. Have you considered safety? And yes, we absolutely have. So working with private industry, many of our locations are at business locations that are open 18 hours a day. Over 40 of our project locations are at businesses that are open 24/7. So many of our locations, over 40, if you're there charging, there will be an attendant at that business, so that business is also occupied. We also consider lighting and placement of those charging stations, ADA accessibility, again, ensuring that there's quality to that charging. One of the first anecdotes we heard in planning our program was a charging station that was at a location that was placed next to a dumpster, not really a great charging experience, not really what we're looking for here, but again, we believe, you know, charging stations that are at businesses that are open 24 hours a day are a great way to address some of that concern.
Caleb, been a great pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. Caleb Vanderweel, transportation, electrification project manager for the Wisconsin DOT. It's great to have him with us, and we'll keep you up to date on it as we move along. Big thanks to our team effort, Clara Neiper, Joel Patnott, our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, our executive director, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller, and of course, Clara and Joel are our producers. Great to have you with us. Stay with us on WPR News.